So I picked it up based on their name, only to find it's got a cover song on it. What? It's the Pink Holes, yes, from 1985, from the We're Glad We Are What We Are album. It's Ring of Fire by the Pink Holes. Have a great weekend. Rocket Attorney wanted me to throw some Billy Crane in just to end up the sets. his new single, Honeycomb, going out to his neighbor, Mike. Thank you for listening to the Viva Lamont radio program. I will catch you guys with a new best of next week.
Those of us who value our free speech, who don't want to see anti-Semitism cynically weaponized by supporters of Israel, who oppose that ideology of Zionism in good faith with good reason, we will not be silenced, we will not be bullied, we will not be cowed, we will not be smeared. So ladies and gentlemen, stand with us against this unjust, inaccurate, irresponsible, dishonest, ludicrous, simplistic, sweeping motion which conflates Judaism, a great and ancient religion, with Zionism, a very modern political ideology, and in doing so risks emptying anti-Semitism of all meaning. Ladies and gentlemen, stand with us tonight, oppose this awful motion.
That's Mehdi Hassan, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Mehdi Hassan, Ilan Pape, Melanie Phillips, and Annette Wilf in a debate on the motion, Anti-Zionism is Anti-Semitism. The debate was held at the Emanuel Center in London in June 2019. As the issues addressed have not gone away, if anything, they have intensified, we are broadcasting this event. The debate moderator is Carrie Gracie of the BBC. She introduces the program.
It is great to see such a full house for this debate and the motion of our debate tonight. Anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. There is so much meaning packed into those words, meaning which stretches down the centuries and meaning which reaches into the lives of millions of people today. Anti-Zionism, anti-Semitism, these terms are very fraught. Anti-Zionism, often defined as opposition to the existence of a state, of a Jewish state, in the territory defined as the historic land of Israel or Palestine. Anti-Semitism, most often defined as hostility, prejudice, or discrimination against Jews. Now, surveys suggest that Israel is one of the most disliked nations in the world, along with Iran and North Korea. But how much of this is driven by policies of the Israeli state, and how much is a cover for age-old hatred of the Jews? These are the questions we will examine this evening. So let's go to our first speaker for the motion, Melanie Phillips, who is a journalist, broadcaster, and author. She has a weekly column in the Times newspaper. She writes for the Jerusalem Post and Jewish Chronicle. Melanie, the floor is yours.
Ladies and gentlemen, I never visited Israel at all until the year 2000, and I never wanted to go there. It didn't sound the kind of place which had anything to offer me. So when in the year 2000, I objected as a matter of sheer rationality and justice that while Israelis were being blown to bits in buses and cafes during what was called the Second Intifada, they were being called Nazis for dealing with the perpetrators, I was astounded to be immediately attacked as a Jew. I was accused immediately of dual loyalty, of being too Jewish, and of waving the shroud of the Holocaust to sanitize the crimes of Israel. The Palestine Solidarity Campaign is riddled with anti-Semitic comments, such as that the Paris Bataclan massacre was a false flag operation to increase support for Israel, or that Kristallnacht was instigated by communist and Freemason Jews to promote war against Germany. Today, a German neo-Nazi group has linked to the BDS movement, noting with approval its efforts to isolate the Zionist aggressor state in defense of the rights of Palestinian people. The language of BDS and the far right is interchangeable. Those who say anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism would have us believe that all this is simply a coincidence. I say it is not, and that anti-Zionism is weaponizing anti-Semitism, and this is why. Let's define, first of all, what we're talking about. What is Zionism? Nothing more or less than the self-determination of the Jewish people in their ancient homeland of Israel. What is anti-Semitism? A delusional hatred and fear of Jews, Judaism, or the Jewish people. But anti-Semitism is not like other prejudices. It has unique characteristics applied to no other group, people, or cause, such as an obsessional and unhinged narrative based entirely on lies, accusing Jews of crimes of which they are not only innocent but the victims, holding them to standards expected of no one else, depicting them as global conspiracy of unique malice and power. Amazing, anti-Zionism has exactly the same characteristics. Don't get me wrong, criticism of Israel's policies, robust criticism, is entirely legitimate. But anti-Zionism is different. Anti-Zionism demonizes, dehumanizes, and delegitimizes Israel in order to bring about its destruction. You may hear some of this slander this evening. The lie, for example, that Israel's an apartheid state when Israeli Arabs have equal civil and religious rights. The lie of ethnic cleansing when the Arab population in the disputed territories has more than quadrupled since Israel's rebirth in 1948. The lie that the Israelis are willful child killers when they in fact go to unique lengths to avoid killing civilians in their always defensive wars, and when the ratio of civilians to fighters that the Israelis kill is at least 3 or 4 times better than any other country, including Britain. The lie of Israel's human rights violations when it's the only country in the Middle East where Arab Muslims and Christians, women and gays can live in freedom and safety. Fundamentally, anti-Zionism is based on the big lie that the Jews seized and occupied another people's land. But history and law show that's completely untrue. The Jews are the only extant indigenous people of the land. Israel was their kingdom more than 3,000 years ago. Driven out when it was occupied, they maintained a continuous presence in the land under the waves of colonialism, Assyrian, Roman, Abbasid, Mamluk, Ottoman, the British. They fought off Arab colonialists to re-establish their state in 1948 and are still fighting off Arab colonialism. The Palestine Mandate of 1922, which parceled out the former Ottoman Empire, enshrined their right to settle throughout that land, a right that endures unaltered in international law. The law also entitles Israel to hold on to land seized from its attackers while that land remains the launchpad for attacks, demonstrably true. The Jews are therefore fully entitled to live in both Israel and the disputed territories, even though they have always agreed to share it with those Arabs who lay a claim to it. But the Palestinians have refused to share it and have responded to repeated offers of a state of their own with terrorism and war. Israel is the only place where Jewish peoplehood makes sense, but anti-Zionism singles out the Jewish people alone as having no right to their homeland. Of course, many groups aspire to a homeland, but Israel is not an inspiration. Israel is a country. No other actual country is singled out for destruction and the mass murder that would inescapably follow. No one tells the Kurds, for example, their aspiration to a homeland is illegitimate and racist. People say Zionism is racism because of the big lie the Jews stole the land. Anti-Zionism thus writes the Jews uniquely out of their own history. It is an anti-Jewish calumny. Now, people say anti-Zionism can't be anti-Semitism because some Jews are anti-Zionist. Very true. But in fact, there have always been Jewish anti-Semites, Karl Marx, to name but one, who wrote, quote, "The emancipation of the Jews is the emancipation of mankind from Judaism." Yes, a small fringe of ultra-Orthodox Jews campaigns against the state of Israel, but they nevertheless pray every day that the Jews should return to live in Zion free of foreign rule. Their beef is they think the return in Israel is premature and should happen under different conditions, so their problem is a matter of timing. What they do not believe is the core doctrine of anti-Semitism, that the Jews have no right to the land of Israel. Now, there's a vital distinction to be made between anti-Semites and anti-Semitism. Many, many decent people believe these lies about Israel out of ignorance or ideology. That does not make them necessarily anti-Semites. But the discourse they endorse is still anti-Semitism's current mutation. Moreover, by supporting Palestinianism, they are supporting not just anti-Zionism, but anti-Semitism too. The Palestinians' real agenda, not two states, but exterminating Israel and replacing it by Palestine, as they repeatedly have told us over the years, is based on an anti-Jewish animus. The evidence of this is all around. Mahmoud Abbas's doctorate in Holocaust denial, his hero worship of the 1930s Grand Mufti in Jerusalem, Haj Amin al-Husseini, who made a pact with Hitler to exterminate every Jew in the Middle East, the grotesque Nazi-style imagery of Palestinian propaganda, such as sermons claiming the Jews are the fabricators of history, who dance and live on the body parts of others, there is no global corruption their rabbis did not allow, Palestinian claims that the Jews are behind 9/11 and that they control the world's media, finance, and US foreign policy. This unhinged, murderous anti-Semitism drives the Palestinian cause. And if our opponents this evening really do believe anti-Zionism is free from anti-Semitism, will they denounce this Palestinian agenda of genocidal, Nazi-style Jew hatred? This is not an academic debate. When I grew up in London, anti-Semitism was confined to a few nutters on the fringes who were treated as pariahs, and now it's been legitimized. Not surprisingly, anti-Semitic attacks are running at record levels. And what's so distressing is to hear our right as Jews to our own peoplehood being singled out as illegitimate, and to hear the unhinged and obsessional lies and distortions about Israel become the default position of fashionable conversation. And then, on top of that, then to be told that the claim that people like myself make that these are anti-Semitic conspiracy theories is itself a conspiracy got up by the Israel embassy. In conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, always attacks Jews as a collective. First, it attacked us as a religion. Then it attacked us as a race of people. Now it attacks us as a people, as the collective Jew in Israel, with exactly the same characteristics as Jew hatred through the centuries. The aim to be free of Jews now takes the form of the aim to be free of the Jewish state. Anti-Zionists treat Israel as the Jew among nations, to be uniquely vilified, slandered, and exterminated. That, ladies and gentlemen, is why anti-Zionism is the new anti-Semitism.
Thank you, Melanie. So now, our first speaker against the motion, Ilan Pape, is an Israeli historian, an anti-Zionist activist, a professor at the University of Exeter. He has challenged traditional versions of Israeli history. Ilan Pape, you have the floor for 10 minutes.
The equation that is being put in front of you tonight is both outrageous and ridiculous. If only because it makes every Palestinian in the world, almost everyone who lives in the Arab and Muslim world, anyone who regards themselves as liberal or on the left, it turns all these people into anti-Semites. Whereas quite a few people who regard themselves as Zionists, like the Christian Zionists, are actually anti-Semites themselves. But it is important to challenge it because it was used with some effect to stifle the debate on Palestine in the West. This allegation is used in order to prevent the promotion for positions of power of politicians known for the long-term support for Palestine. By defaming these politicians as anti-Semitic, official Israel and its supporters worldwide hope to bring them down, as in the case of Jeremy Corbyn, or delegitimize them, as in the case of Ilhan Omar in the American Congress. So this is a good opportunity and an appropriate venue to say loud and clear that if you are against Zionism, or if you define yourself as I do, an anti-Zionist, you are not anti-Semite, or in my case, a self-hating Jew. I will make 5 points, one long one and 4 or 5 short ones. Anti-Semitism is an old, ugly attitude that demonizes Jews because of who they are and led in the past to horrendous policies of discrimination and genocide. It still prevails today, and despite the passing of years, it's basically not changed much. Its origins are deeply rooted in the Christian faith and were adopted in more recent years by right-wing supremacists and some extreme Islamic groups. Anti-Zionism, on the other hand, is a new phenomenon, as is Zionism, and dates back to the 1820s, when, as you know, Zionism began as a Christian project before it was a Jewish project. And then it was part of an internal debate within evangelical Christianity. Anti-Zionism then was a moral position against romantic nationalism and Christian fundamentalism that today we call Christian Zionism. Christian Zionism is an evangelical belief that the return of the Jews to Palestine would precipitate the second coming of the Messiah, the resurrection of the dead, and the conversion of the Jews to Christianity or their barbecuing in hell. Now, these barbecuing Christians, who are very important, are anti-Semites who want to get rid of all the Jews they don't like and get in return the only Jew they want, Jesus Christ. It's a double bill. They are today the most important Zionists in the U.S., providing immunity for Israeli policies on the ground. When Jewish activists and intellectuals adopted Zionism in response to anti-Semitism in the late 19th century, their antagonists were mainly other Jews. They were either Orthodox Jews who saw a premature return to Palestine as tempering with the will of God and regarded as a heresy the substitution of rich monotheistic religion with the ideologically poor modern idea of romantic nationalism. So they were definitely not anti-Semites. Other Jews believed that supporting universal ideologies such as liberalism or socialism would be the answer, and if they had to move geographically from anti-Semitic environments, they preferred to go somewhere else, mainly to the U.S., but not only to the U.S. They were also not anti-Semites. When Zionism became a settler colonial movement on the ground with the building of Jewish colonies in late Ottoman Palestine and during the British Mandate, the Palestinian National Movement perceived Zionism as an existential threat to the indigenous people of Palestine, a fear that turned to be valid, as transpired with the 1948 ethnic cleansing of the people of Palestine during the Nakba. Opposing the Jewish settlers and their plans for the Palestinians' homeland was not anti-Semitic, but anti-colonialist, very much as the Algerians objected to the colonization of Algeria. A small group of the Jewish settlers became anti-Zionists themselves when they consented to live within Arab Palestine as guests, but not as colonizers, as was advocated to them by Mahatma Gandhi in the 1930s, and because of that position, he was never honored with a street named after him in Israel, not even a small passway or a staircase. After the creation of the State of Israel in 1948, anti-Zionism as an anti-colonialist ideology continued to inform the Palestinian National Movement's vision and strategy, as is manifested in the PLO National Charter, that called for the establishment of a democratic secular state in Palestine that would respect all three religions. In Israel itself, the Communist Party, supported almost exclusively by the Palestinian minority inside Israel, not because of the communist ideology, but because it was the only anti-Zionist party Israel allowed to exist, they regarded Zionism as an ideology of discrimination and apartheid. Most scholars today, looking at Israel then and today, agree that this is a valid point, which again has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. Two, in our century, anti-Zionism is a moral position against the Israeli structural violence directed at the Palestinians, which is attributed by anti-Zionists such as myself to an ideology that is not only endangering the very existence of the Palestinians, but is also very bad for the Jews who live outside or inside Israel. This ideology generates anti-Semitism. Opposing it might bring it down. In our century, anti-Zionism is a scholarly position, a moral stance, and a vision for the future. As a scholarly position, it frames Zionism as settler colonialism, similar to European settlers' movement who went to the Americas, South Africa, and Australia, encountering indigenous people and removing them in order to create new homelands for themselves. It's a moral stance that rejects an ideology that imposes an apartheid system inside Israel, a military occupation in the West Bank, and siege on the Gaza ghetto. It's a vision for the future of a democratic state for all by restoring justice to the land, by respecting United Nations Resolution 194, calling for the unconditional return of the Palestinian refugees expelled in 1948 and since the Nakba. This may be a utopian view, but it's not an anti-Zionist one, anti-Semitic one. Three, for those who claim that anti-Zionism is a refusal to recognize the right of Israel to exist, we should say that states do not exist by right. They are founded by historical processes, and they become a fait accompli. The debate is about the nature of the state and the regime. We are all entitled to wish for and work for a better, more just, and egalitarian state for everyone who lives in Israel and Palestine, and for those who were expelled from there. Four. In 1975, a vast majority of the United Nations member states defined Zionism as a form of racism and racial discrimination. It was passed with the same majority that passed the 1947 resolution recognizing Israel. The difference was that in 1947, the colonized world was not represented in the United Nations. In 1975, it was. where it was still trying to find its way in the post-colonial world, the Third World's discourse equated Zionism with continued colonialism. Alas, neoliberalism and corruption in the post-colonial political system and aggressive American imperialism have cast it to the sideways of history, this impulse and energy. But at its height and within it, anti-Zionism was part of the wish of the colonized people to build a better and more just world. Again, nothing to do with anti-Zionism, with anti-Semitism. When the 1975 resolution was revoked in 1991, the debate on Zionism entered a new phase, its present phase. After the horrific events in 9/11 and the so-called war on terror, the Israeli Hasbara invented the threat of a new anti-Semitism. This was the only way to repel the moral outrage people around the world felt towards the policies of incremental genocide in the Gaza Strip and the brutal oppression of the West Bank. If you voiced criticism against these policies, you were depicted as a new anti-Semite, and the Israeli academia was recruited to provide scholarly scaffolding for such an accusation. The Western elites bought or were intimidated into buying this false allegation, but the civil society, and in particular the younger generation, reject with disgust this attempt to silence them. They know enough to call the bluff and understand the full meaning of solidarity with the Palestinians. They demonstrate in the streets, in the campuses, and join the Palestinians on the ground at the personal cost to show how outrageous it is to call the pure struggle for justice anti-Semitic. If you are an anti-Zionist today, you are not only standing firmly on a sound moral base in condemning this ideology that generates all these crimes, you are also expressing your disgust at the hypocrisy of your government, mainstream media, and academia. We will not be silenced by false accusation of anti-Semitism. Let us retake the conversation and prioritize it. Let us discuss how to stop the destruction of Palestine and the Palestinians. Let us fight violent fanaticism wherever we encounter it. Uproot racism of all kinds without building a hierarchy of victims and remove silly and outrageous equations like the one titling the event tonight. Thank you.
That's Ilan Pape. Before him, you heard Melanie Phillips debating the motion, anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. This is Independent Alternative Radio. You can get copies of this program by calling us at 1-800-444-1977. We're offering free of charge MP3s, PDFs, and printed transcripts. Our website, alternativeradio.org. We're also offering Noam Chomsky's latest book, Consequences of Capitalism.
So on to our second speaker for the motion, Einat Wolf. And Einat has been a member of the Israeli Knesset for first Labour and then the Independence Party between 2010 and 2013. And she has written extensively on Zionism. Einat, the floor is yours for 10 minutes.
Thank you. So, we seem to all agree that anti-Semitism is bad. Of course, educated, knowledgeable people are unlikely to be seduced by it because we know where it leads: Nazism, Auschwitz, and the gas chambers. But anti-Zionism does not appear to be in the same category. It appears to be good. We heard here that it is about supporting Palestinians, about fighting for human rights. Educated, knowledgeable, well-meaning people might support it. But the anti-Semitism we all acknowledge as bad, when it started, looked nothing like where it led. In fact, when you compare the beginnings of anti-Semitism with anti-Zionism, the similarities are striking. Anti-Semitism began by creating a new collective designation for the same people, which rendered them different. In secular 19th century Europe, it was no longer Jews, but Semites. And it never was intended to mean anything but Jews. In the Soviet Union, who claimed to not notice different religions and peoples, Jews were designated as Zionists. And today, in the West, in the UK, Zionists, Zios. The designation is then described as having essential, immutable, loathsome qualities. In Christian Europe, we were Christ killers. To the Nazis, we were an impure race. To the Soviets, we were capitalists and imperialists. And today, the State of Israel is the ultimate violator of human rights. It is described as born in sin. It is guilty by its very nature of the crimes of racism, apartheid, ethnic cleansing, Nazism, genocide. The designation of the group and ascribing of essential evil qualities is always given the aura of rationality and respectability by relying on the greatest source of authority of a given era: religion in pre-modern times, science in the modern era, human rights in our own. The aura of the greatest authority is necessary because the collective transformation of the Jews into a loathsome other requires that one be willing to twist reality, if not outright ignore it. It is only by appealing to the authority of religious doctrine that all Jews living in the 12th century could be collectively designated as the killers of Christ over 1,000 years earlier. It is only by appealing to the authority of a perverted science that the very Jews who contributed to European society could suddenly be considered as endangering its racial purity. And it is only by appealing to perverted version of human rights that Zionism in Israel could be designated as its greatest violators. It is only by perverting the idea of human rights that those who were actually ethnically cleansed from every part of the Arab world could be accused of ethnic cleansing. It is only through the sort of perversion that the people who repeatedly said yes to partitioning the land into a Jewish state and a Palestinian state could be described as those who stand in the way of a two-state solution. And it is only through this perversion that in an age when the idea of the nation is still tied for almost all states to the idea of a common history, language, ethnicity, and remnants of religion, Israel is singled out as uniquely deviant. But why go to all that effort to single out a group and distort reality? Because we humans have a primal need for scapegoats. And for whatever reason, my people have been the designated scapegoats for so many and for so long. For medieval Christianity, we stood between a brutish and nasty world and salvation. For Germany, for Europe, we stood between them and glory. For Stalin, we stood in the way of communist utopia. And today, why bother fighting colonialism and its aftermath? Easier to designate Zionists as colonialists and blame them. Why do the hard work of fighting racism and its many manifestations across all societies? Easier to designate Zionism as racism and apartheid and blame it. Why acknowledge the tremendous difficulties of living up to the ideals of human rights, designate Zionism in Israel as its greatest violators and blame them? But the problem with human scapegoats is that unlike ancient animal ones, humans might resist their sacrifice a bit more. And we can't have that happen, can we? So action must be taken to reduce their resistance. How? Strip them of their defenses. Push them to the margins. Step by step, take away that which protects them. But it must be done gradually. Anti-Semitism did not start by stripping Jews of their citizenship, confiscating their assets, and pushing them into ghettos. It started by slowly pushing Jews out of the positions they were able to attain after several decades of European emancipation. It operated by making it more and more difficult for Jews to feel comfortable in European society. Anti-Semitism also lured Jews into dropping their defenses, preventing them from organizing against the coming danger, telling them that if they were the good kind of Jew, for example, in Germany, those who fought for Germany in World War I, they would be spared. They were not. Note how anti-Zionism operates now. Its main targets are the two places where Jews have organized most effectively for their defense: the State of Israel and the pro-Israel lobby in the US. The legitimacy of both is relentlessly and uniquely questioned. Jews, now designated as Zionists, are increasingly pushed out of certain spaces. Jewish students in the US are slowly pulling out of universities known for their virulent anti-Zionism. Liberal activist Jews are finding they are increasingly unwelcome in progressive circles. Jews here in Britain are finding they can no longer be in the Labour Party, their traditional political home, wondering if they might one day have to leave the country altogether. Anti-Zionism also lures Jews to give up their defenses. We heard it here. Why don't we all live together in a single state? Yes, we know that nowhere in the Arab world have Jews ever been treated as equals and were violently ethnically cleansed when they dared raise their heads. Yes, we know that by national state, certainly in this region, but not only, descend into bloody mayhem, but we assure you, this one will work. Just forgo your insistence on having your own state where you control your defense. Anti-Zionists also insist on their respectability. They will try to convince you that the fact that the targets of this new form of virulent hatred bear a striking resemblance to those who were targets in previous times is sheer coincidence. They will insist that the fact that the charges against this group appear like variations on the ancient themes of anti-Semitism is sheer coincidence. They might even convince you they are fighting anti-Semitism, but the old, easy-to-identify kind, which we already know is bad. And this is where it all comes together. In the past, waves of Jew hatred and anti-Semitism did not arise from something that those who were hated actually did. It arose from a crisis in the society of those doing the hating. And in an age of crisis, especially a crisis of identity, when we're no longer sure who we are, what we stand for, we desperately need certainties. And there are few greater certainties in this world than that the Jews did it. And so the Zionists are designated as a collective group, which happens to coincide with the group previously known as Semites and Jews. They are then ascribed the most loathsome qualities of our time by appealing to the great authority of our era, and then they are slowly subject to a process designed to strip them of the means of resisting their ultimate role as scapegoats for the crisis of the era. And when that process would be complete, the scapegoat could finally be sacrificed in the vain hope that in doing so, a better world would emerge. It never does. And this is why the topic of this debate is not just another topic. It raises the very specter that we might be a society on the precipice, which is why we are here today, in the hope that some of you will see the deep insidious undercurrents, so that this time we will not have to wait to see where anti-Zionism leads, and only then look back in hindsight and say, ah, yes, that rising wave of anti-Zionism was indeed the new form of anti-Semitism.
Eina, thank you. And to our final speaker, who is our second speaker against the motion, Mehdi Hassan. Mehdi is a journalist, a broadcaster, and he's a columnist on the US online magazine, The Intercept. Mehdi, the floor is yours for 10.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have been witnessing tonight a deeply
cynical proposition. Deliver a farrago of straw men, distortions, deflections, false accusations, and of course, straight up pro-Israel propaganda. Then again, hearing Melanie Phillips come here and champion the rights of gays in Israel in order to defend Zionism was well worth the entry ticket in and of itself. So let's be clear about what this motion is tonight, because it's the motion you all have to vote on in good conscience. The motion says, quote, anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. It doesn't say some anti-Zionists are anti-Semites, which is true. It doesn't say anti-Zionism can sometimes turn into anti-Semitism, which is true. It doesn't say that anti-Semites often use anti-Zionism as cover, as an excuse for their bigotry and racism, which is true. I wouldn't oppose any of that. But that's not what the motion says. The motion says, ridiculously, sweepingly, offensively, ahistorically, that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. That merely being opposed to Zionism, a political ideology, remember, is inherently, by definition, ipso facto, anti-Semitic, which is absurd. Think about the implications of voting for that tonight. You'd be saying every anti-Zionist is a bigot, a racist, and an anti-Semite, by definition. Even the many Jewish and Israeli anti-Zionists. So Ilan, Jewish historian, born and raised in Israel, served in the Israeli military. He's an anti-Semite. That's what they want you to believe. That's what they want you to vote for tonight. So is the former speaker of Israel's own parliament, the Knesset, Avraham Berg. Melody would say he's a self-hating Jew. So is my Intercept colleague, Naomi Klein, the acclaimed author and climate change activist. So is Noam Chomsky. He's an anti-Semite as well. They want you to vote for them and say that the thousands of Haredi, ultra-Orthodox, anti-Zionist Jews who oppose Zionism for religious theological reasons, they're anti-Semites too. That's what they want. That is what they are asking you to vote for tonight. It's absurd and it's ahistorical. Don't take my word for it. Listen to the 35 top Israeli Jewish scholars and academics, historians of the Holocaust, who came together just a few months ago and published an open letter in which they wrote, and I quote, many victims of the Holocaust opposed Zionism. On the other hand, many anti-Semites supported Zionism. It is nonsensical and inappropriate to identify anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. End quote. Are they anti-Semites too? Really? All 35 of them? By the way, in terms of the history they refer to in their letter, it is an undeniable, indisputable fact that many, many European anti-Semites, as Ilan alluded to, did support Zionism at the outset. They did embrace the founder of Zionism, Theodor Herzl, because for their own selfish racist reasons, they shared his goal of treating Jews as a foreign, separate nation and getting them out of Europe. Take British Foreign Secretary Arthur Balfour, author of the 1917 Balfour Declaration, in favor of Zionism. Balfour dismissed Jews as, quote, an alien and hostile people. He sponsored legislation to keep Jewish refugees out of the UK. The only Jewish member of the cabinet at that time, Sir Edwin Samuel Montagu, opposed the Balfour Declaration and called Zionism a mischievous political creed. Yet apparently, according to the proposition tonight, Montagu's the anti-Semite and Balfour isn't. That's the madness that you're going to vote for tonight. This motion is not just ahistorical, not just absurd, not just offensive. It's a distraction. It's a dangerous distraction from the very real and murderous anti-Semitism that is on the rise and that comes not from the left, not from anti-Zionists, not from the BDS movement, as Melanie would have you believe, but from a resurgent far right. In Germany, according to official figures, in 2017, 9 out of 10 anti-Semitic hate crimes were carried out by far right or neo-Nazi groups. I live in the US. 2 synagogue attacks in the space of 6 months, 12 innocent Jewish worshippers murdered in cold blood by far-right white nationalists. And yet the proposition tonight, like the Netanyahu government, want you to ludicrously believe that the threat to Jews right now, the real rise in the new anti-Semitism, comes from the anti-Zionists, from the BDS movement, from the Palestinians, and not from the murderous far-right. When the irony is that Netanyahu, prime minister of the world's only Jewish state, has been cozying up to some of the worst anti-Semites on the right, who also happen to be proud Zionists. They're not anti-Zionists, they're hard right, hardcore Zionists, and pals of Netanyahu. Let's also just deal with some of the canards we've heard tonight from the proposition. Enat mentioned that it's anti-Semitic to suggest Israel is born in sin. Every black American I know says to me and says to everyone else that the United States was born in sin. Slavery was a sin at the start of the United States. No one accuses them of being anti-white racists or anti-American racists. It's just a statement of historical fact. They say the proposition that when you oppose Zionism, you're denying Jews and no one else a right to self-determination, which is just flat false. Not every nation or ethnic group wants a state, gets a state, has a state. Ask the Kurds, ask the Catalans, ask the Scots. There are more than 5,000 ethnic groups in the world today, but only 193 member states at the United Nations. Take the Druze, an Arab ethnic minority group. 100,000 or so live in Israel. Do they have a right to self-determination? If they create a Druze state inside of Israel, is Einat okay with that? If Einat says, no, you can't have a Druze state, is she racist towards the Druze? National self-determination doesn't always correspond with statehood. Melanie says, it's not racist for the Kurds to aspire to statehood. She's right, it's not. But the flip side of that is true as well. The British government, the American government, most of the EU governments do not support Kurdish statehood. Does that mean the British government, all of us, are racist towards the Kurds? People have legitimate debates about where state lines should be drawn, which states should be created, how those states exist. It's not racism or bigotry to have that legitimate debate. It can be, but it's not by definition. The issue is not whether Jews deserve a homeland or have a historic connection to the land of Palestine. Of course they do. The issue is whether those historic and religious claims justify creating and expanding a Jewish majority state in which one ethnic group is privileged over another, while another group is permanently disenfranchised, dispossessed, and subjected to endless military occupation. That's what we're here to oppose tonight. Nothing more, nothing less. And has the proposition even stopped to ask what it means to say to that oppressed group, the Palestinian people, to say to them, that you're either a Zionist, you either subscribe to the ideology of your oppressor, or you're a racist. What kind of choice is that? Melanie says tonight that denying Jewish nationhood is racist, it's anti-Semitic. And yet she has no issue erasing the Palestinian people from the face of the planet. She said in her speech that only the Jews have a unique right to nationhood and statehood in that part of the world. Not the Palestinians. What is that? Is that not bigotry? Is that not racism? Is that not wiping a people off the face of the planet? But this is what you'll be voting for tonight if you vote for the proposition. This is what the Israeli, pro-Israeli argument has always been. To silence the Palestinians. To silence their opposition to occupation. To silence their resistance as Palestinian citizens living inside of Israel. To a nationalistic ideology which treats them like second-class citizens, which denies them many of the rights and privileges of the majority. And one thing I want to make clear to you tonight. You don't have to be an anti-Zionist to vote with me and Ilan tonight. You don't even have to be a critic of Israel. You can be the biggest supporter of Israel in the world and vote with the opposition. All you have to be is someone who recognizes that it is an egregious smear, a naked slur, to claim, to label those of us, Jews and non-Jews alike, who oppose a political ideology in good faith because we think it's unjust, iniquitous, oppressive, to label us as anti-Semites for holding that political view. All you have to be is someone who recognizes that the claim that we hate or are opposed to Jews simply because we don't agree with the idea of a state that privileges one group over another makes us racists. So let me repeat, to be clear. Tonight's debate is not about Israel per se. It's not about whether you support or oppose Israel or the occupation. It's about whether you believe the proposition have made the case that those of us who oppose Israel in its current form, who oppose the political ideology underpinning it, that we're racists. That's the bar that has to be crossed tonight. It's that simple. And I'll tell you this for free. Those of us who value our free speech, who don't want to see anti-Semitism cynically weaponized by supporters of Israel, who oppose that ideology of Zionism in good faith with good reason, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not be silenced. We will not be bullied. We will not be cowed. We will not be smeared. So ladies and gentlemen, stand with us against this unjust, inaccurate, irresponsible, dishonest, ludicrous, simplistic, sweeping motion which conflates Judaism, a great and ancient religion, with Zionism, a very modern political ideology, and in doing so risks emptying anti-Semitism of all meaning. Ladies and gentlemen, stand with us tonight. Oppose this awful motion.
Now we're going to go for our final statements from our speakers on the panel, summing up speeches to be made seated and to last no longer than 2 minutes. In fact, do you know what, all four of you, if you could just kind of keep them really tight, if you can get them down to less than 2 minutes, I would be grateful. We're going to go in reverse order, so Mehdi, you first.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you still haven't voted, I want you to think of two groups of people when you are voting, for whom opposing this crude, cynical motion is so important, so crucial, so personal. The first group, of course, are the Palestinians. Because if you vote for the motion tonight, you're saying, despite Melanie and Einat's best attempts to try and play this, it's ideology versus adherence, you're saying we all have to be Zionists. Otherwise, we're racists, we're bigots, we're anti-Semites. Which, look, wouldn't be the end of the world for me. Fine, I'll be a Zionist if you want me to be a Zionist. I mean, I once almost voted Lib Dem. I'm okay with labels. But to ask the Palestinians to just not just accept their dispossession, their ethnic cleansing, their ongoing occupation, but to also call themselves Zionists or else is outrageous. You can't ask Palestinians to be Zionists. You just can't. And by the way, if they say it's racist to oppose Zionism, well, it's racist to ask Palestinians not to oppose their own occupiers. And look, if you don't care about the Palestinians, still vote against the motion tonight, because there's another group of people you'll be throwing under the bus if you vote for this motion, anti-Zionist Jews. And you risk throwing all these people under the bus, Jews who oppose Zionism in good faith. We haven't talked about that tonight. Not once did the proposition acknowledge that we might have good reasons for our views, that we're not all trying to hide behind, what was it Einat said? The shiny respectability of the new anti-Semitism. Don't tar all those people who are fighting for human rights, who are fighting in good faith, as racists, as self-hating Jews, as anti-Semites, for the sake of a political ideology. Don't do it. Don't do it. Whatever your views on Israel-Palestine, vote with the opposition tonight against this ludicrous, dishonest, offensive motion.
Einat, now your closing statement for the motion.
I doubt there's a lot of good faith here, and I have to say, if Zionists such as myself can support Palestinian self-determination, I see no reason why the reverse should not be also asked. But I want to take us and use this opportunity to go back to the fundamentals and to the big picture, a reminder about what is actually going on in the mechanism. Remember, step one is the Zionists are designated as a collective group which happens to coincide with the group previously known as Semites and Jews. Step two, they are then ascribed the most loathsome qualities of our time. Step three, it is done by appealing to the greatest authority of the era. Step four, and this is where we are now, they are slowly subject to a process designed to strip them of their defenses. But we were told today and are asked to believe that this time the Zionists, are truly to blame. Germans and Europeans too sincerely believe that the Semites were truly to blame. But we now know that anti-Semitism arose from a deep crisis in the society doing the blaming. After all, these templates and ways of thinking about my people have been around for millennia. Yet they become particularly useful in times of crisis. And we are indeed again a species in crisis. Technology questions our very intelligence and humanity. Extreme weather undermines our confidence in our control. Inequality undermines our ideal progress. Our leaders, or lack thereof, leave us feeling bereft of a sense there's a steady hand at the helm. And at times of crisis, we desperately crave certainty. And there are few greater certainties in this world to grab on than that the Jews are to blame. As a society, we can emerge from our crisis, but only if we ask ourselves, how can we all do better rather than who is to blame? And I believe we can all indeed do better. Thank you.
Thank you. William Papi.
We heard a lot about the Zionist ideology and the idea that the land of Palestine is the land of Israel. Always when you hear it, think about someone coming to you at the dead of night in London and tells you, I used to live in your house 2,000 years ago, and because of that, the house belongs to me. And the next day, they come with the police. And the next day, they come with the police who says, They have a right, you have to give them half of their house. Zionism was a settler colonialist movement that was running away from persecution, but it wanted as much of Palestine as possible with as few Palestinians in it as possible. This was the aim of Zionism in the late 19th century. This is the aim of Zionism today. We are all entitled to go through the same process that happened in South Africa. We are entitled, as Jews and as Palestinians, to live in one democratic state where everyone is equal, and stop and reject an ideology that claims that some people are equal and some people are not. I'm asking you, for the sake even for Jewish communities around the world, because settler colonialism in Israel will become worse as the century will continue, for the sake of the people who live here and the sake of the people who live there, we are entitled to have the same kind of democracy that everyone else has without Boris Johnson. Thank you.
Thank you, Ilan. And Melanie.
Well, I'm truly sorry that Mehdi can't understand my distinction. It's very simple. My point is simply this, that people of good faith sometimes swallow outright lies because they believe them to be true. And we've heard this evening some of those lies come from the other side, falsehoods about Israel which are believed to be true. For example, Mehdi suggests that Israel is not a state of all its citizens, that the Arabs somehow don't have full equal rights. He calls them Palestinians. Perhaps Mehdi doesn't also understand that 20% or so of Israel's population are Israeli Arabs. Israeli Arabs have full equal rights. You can see them in the Israeli parliament. You can see them in the Israeli courts. You can see them in the Israeli universities. What Mehdi says, what Mehdi means when he says that that he wants a state of all its citizens, he wants a state of Israel which is not Israel anymore, which is not a Jewish state. So the Britons can have Britain, the French can have France, the Americans can have America, but the Jews cannot have Israel. I would say that is outright discrimination. Ilan says it's their house. Whose house? There were dozens and dozens of different nationalities in Mandate Palestine. The Arabs came in large number because the Jews were returning, and rightly, they thought that they would bring prosperity. In conclusion, let me return you to the proposition under consideration. Is anti-Zionism anti-Semitism? Mehdi says not everyone can have a state. That is absolutely correct. But why this is a form of anti-Semitism is the unique nature of the animus against Zionism. Jews are the only people living in their own historic homeland who are deemed to have no right to that homeland, and whose claim to self-determination in that homeland, which is theirs by right, is illegitimate and racist. That vile, bigoted, malicious animus is unique against Israel, and it is why anti-Zionism is the unique calumny against the Jewish people, and it has exactly the same unique characteristics as anti-Semitism.
Thank you all for your summing up speeches, and that concludes our debate. So it is time now to announce the final vote count. And a reminder that our motion this evening was anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. A reminder also that we began the evening with 15% for the motion, 59% against the motion, and 26% undecided. We end as follows: 19% for the motion, 76% against the motion, and 5% undecided. So the motion this evening has been defeated. This House does not believe that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism.
That was the moderator, Carrie Gracie of the BBC. Before her, you heard Melanie Phillips, Ilan Pape, Enet Wilf, and Mehdi Hassan debating the question, Anti-Zionism is Anti-Semitism. The event was recorded at the Emanuel Center in London in June 2019. The moderator was Carrie Gracie of the BBC. This program is produced by Alternative Radio based in Boulder, Colorado. We are independent and progressive and in our 35th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To place a credit card order for CDs of today's program, Mehdi Hassan et al. Debate the Proposition, Anti-Zionism is Anti-Semitism, and Noam Chomsky's latest book, Consequences of Capitalism, just give us a call at 1-800-444-1977. Again, that number is 1-800-444-1977. We're offering free of charge MP3s, PDFs, and printed transcripts of this program. Just call us at 1-800-444-1977. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.
The transition to a democratically organized enterprise, not only because it's democratic, but because it's the one way forward that can allow us to do what needs to be done for our public health, for our egalitarian values. Otherwise, the prospect is for more signs of a declining empire. And that prospect alone should persuade us.
That's Richard Wolff, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Richard Wolff on transitioning to democratic enterprises. Capitalism is exhibiting a hardening of its economic arteries. The pandemic has exposed profound structural problems. The crisis demands a serious examination of not only its root causes, but for viable solutions. Once we are past the pandemic, do we go back to the status quo ante of massive eco-devastation and inequalities in income and wealth, or do we create a new paradigm? Economist Richard Wolff suggests cooperatives offer equitable alternatives. He says, if workers collectively and democratically owned and operated the enterprises, they wouldn't be profit maximizers that goes to a tiny group of people. The passion Americans sometimes bring to democratic values in politics have been peculiarly unapplied to economics, with disastrous results. Cooperation, Wolff says, is not just a nice, warm, cuddly, good thing to do. Cooperation is what can save us from the collapse of our system. Our guest today is Richard Wolff. He's professor of economics emeritus at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. and currently a visiting professor at the New School in New York. The New York Times calls him America's most prominent Marxist economist. He's the author of numerous books, including Democracy at Work and The Sickness is the System. He spoke in early April. And now, Richard Wolff.
I am going to talk about the economic and political and social crisis of the United States at this time. And I'm going to do it borrowing from a wonderful Christian philosopher of a long time ago, a German named Hegel. And his greatest student, by the way, was Karl Marx. And my work is influenced by both of those enormously productive thinkers. Hegel's contribution was to teach us that all things that we can think about, all things that are in the world, are, as he put it, in a perpetual state of contradiction and change. We know that from popular wisdom, which says every good thing has a bad side, every bad thing has a good side, every blessing is also enwrapped in a curse, and vice versa. Hegel made this comment in a general philosophic way. His student, Karl Marx, applied it to the economic system of his time, capitalism, which has survived until it's also the economic system of our time. And he said that it has its good parts, but it also has its bad parts, and that the dynamic of change of capitalism is a struggle, if you like, a contest, a shifting balance between the positive and the negatives as they change each other and as they are changed by the larger context of nature, of history, and of all the cultural phenomena of our lives. Please keep this balance of the positive and the negative in your mind, because I'm going to try to explain what the problems of US capitalism are, and they are daunting. And I'm also going to conclude by talking about a way out, a way forward, building on certain positivities of this capitalist system that give us a chance to get out of the dilemmas that are crowding in on us. So let me begin. I believe we are in a period of time which can best be captured by the following somewhat scary understanding. The American period of empire, which is now roughly 100 years old, we became the dominant economic power in the world as a result of World War I. In that war, the dominant capitalist country of the previous two centuries, namely Great Britain, was finally destroyed. The only other contender for dominant economic power at that time, 100 years ago, was Germany. And what basically happened was that the German and British empires destroyed one another in that great conflagration, World War I, which also took down virtually every other aspiring would-be economic empire, the Austro-Hungarian, the French, and so forth. What emerged was a century of US economic dominance. It was a century in which American capitalism grew spectacularly, consolidated its global position after World War II, literally by doing something no empire had done before. Even the British Empire with its far-flung colonial system, of which the United States had been a part. Even the British Empire could not and did not equal what the United States was able to accomplish between 1921 and now. The dollar became the world currency that everybody basically used. I'm assuming most of you